Accession number 25194, Real 2.
Alf Stewart, Real 2. Yes, do you remember much about North Africa? You know, you were there at a very interesting time, weren't you? This would have been, am I right, before the fall of Tobruk?
That's right. We were there before the fall of Tobruk, yes.
What are your memories of that, Tobruk itself?
My memories of that was just delivering goods. Well, it's all desert round by Tobruk. And delivering goods, delivering food, delivering ammunition, delivering tanks. A couple of Matilda tanks we took up there. And that's all I remember. Yeah.
Where would you have taken them from? Where were you? Where was your base?
Our base was Tobruk.
It was Tobruk itself?
Yeah.
Yes, in the harbour. We
went to just outside Tobruk to... what was the name of it? Gazala, which was just before Tobruk. We used to deliver the goods to a place called Gazala at that time.
This would mainly have been the Italians fighting at that time, would it?
At that time, the Italians, yeah.
Yes. How were they rated, the Italians, compared with Germans, do you think?
Well, I couldn't say much about it, because I never saw a lot of the Italians, not a lot of the Germans, you see,
until
I got wounded and I was captured.
Yes, but it seems that your treatment was very good, from what you've said, by the Italians, is that right?
I was treated quite well, really. Not bad, anyway. They were scared of the Germans, to be true, the Italians were. They were. They were scared of the Germans. And in Tobruk, we used to got a lot of sandstorms there, and we used to, at night, we used to burrow ourselves in the ground and cover ourselves over. In the ground there. One morning I woke up and there was a scorpion in my shoe. So I knocked it off and that was that. Anyway, when you're young, you do things which you wouldn't do normally, to be truthful.
Were supplies coming through quite straightforwardly?
Supplies were coming through quite well, yes, yes. And after that, after I got captured, when I'm going from one thing to the other.
Yeah, that's fine, because, you know, this was the next stage, wasn't it, when you were captured, yes.
And I knew nothing more until I woke up in Derna, in a camp in Derna.
Was it an Italian camp. Was it fairly well organised, that?
Well, it must have been. I couldn't say, really. It must have been well organised, because they put me on a hospital ship to go to Caserta Hospital. To Naples. And
did the Red Cross appear at any time?
Yes, the Red Cross. That is why they were good with us, because the Red Cross were quite good. They'd done a wonderful job. My wife used to send out to me food, containers of food and that, but we never used to get three quarters of it, we never got. Because they were short of food and they used to take it. This was in Germany, when I was in Germany. And they used to 344, camp 344, and I never got it at all, hardly. Well, it proves that by the time I came home, I weighed, I think it was about 9.3, something like that. Very, very, I'd lost a lot of weight because of the death march.
Had the Red Cross appeared in Italy at the hospital there, Caserta?
Yes.
To check?
No, not in the hospital they didn't come. No, They came when we were in, the Red Cross came over in Camp 66, Camp Concentramento 66. They came while we were in, when they knew the Red Cross was coming, they used to make the place look, you know, a lot better than what it was. And then Lambsdorff 344, they came. They'd done a very good job, really. Wonderful job.
So you were saying, you know, when I interrupted your the flow to take you back to Tobruk, that you were then sent to this other camp as a sort of welfare person to look after the men. Oh, is that right?
That's right.
Yes.
We were sent from 344, Lambsdorff 344, which was in Germany, to Upper Silesia, to a place called Retterbor.
How do you know how to spell that?
Retterbor?
Yes.
R-A-T-A-B-O-R. Retterbor.
Retterbor camp.
It's a well-known camp. It was wasn't a camp, it was a town.
But the men were in a camp, were
yeah.
they? And you were in a camp?
Yeah.
I suppose that would have been...
Not in a camp. We were in a camp, yeah. We were in billets. They were in billets there. Small billets.
Well, what were they like? Was it, you know, an enclosed area the billets were in?
Yes, yes. Because they were manufacturing sugar.
Would that be from sugar beet?
Sugar beet, yeah.
So what were the conditions like in the sort of living accommodation
part? I must say this, the Wehrmacht, which is the ordinary German soldier, was quite not bad at all. They weren't too bad. That's how I found them. They weren't too bad. The ordinary German soldier wasn't too bad. It was the Gestapo and those who were under the Gestapo who were terrible. They were really, you can't imagine how bad. They were really bad, and there was a lot of them. Well, they used to manufacture the sugar in vats. And I used to walk round there and see that the boys had had plenty of food. They were getting their rations, which they did get there. And then...
And they're living... Did they have, you know, comfortable sleeping... And were they kept warm?
Well, then we were sleeping on the floor in palliasses. There he is.
Basic, very basic.
Yeah,
wasn't
very
it?
Basic. It was basic there, yes. And there was German people there that used to serve, to bring bits of food into you. German women used to bring bits of food into you. And to be truthful, I suppose we were treated like prisoners of war. We were POWs. Anyway, the Feldwebel, the Oberfeldwebel, who was in charge of our little group, he was quite good. He knew the war was going to finish very shortly, and he used to say to me, when we get back to England, tell them that I have been very good to you. You see, this is what they... wanted you to do. And he hadn't been bad, as it happens. He hadn't been bad, and the boys got on well with him, and he was quite good to them. He was like a sergeant major of the camp. Then all of a sudden, there was a ringing, and everybody had to be up and ready to move. And it was when the Russians were pushing this way, and the Americans and British were pushing that way, they started us on the 2,000-mile death march. And it was a death march. To be truthful, after the first couple of months, our shoes, well, we didn't have shoes, we had stuff tied round our feet, stuff tied round our feet, and it was winter time as well. And... you know who were good was the British MOs who were on the march. if you got on the march, a lot of boys had their, what do you call it, a frostbite. And you want to see what they'd done, the MOs, with ordinary pen knives and that, they used to cut the toes off of people. It was really shocking. You couldn't realise how really bad it was. After so many miles a day, and we were knocked out completely, we were pushed into and there was thousands on this march. They came from all different camps. Thousands and thousands. We were pushed into a chicken pen at night to sleep. We had rats running over us and everything. It was terrible. But you got immune to it. You didn't even worry about it. After about 3 months, we got as far as Czechoslovakia. 2.5, 3 months. We got as far as Czechoslovakia. And walking through the town of Czechoslovakia, there was an old lady, took her life in her hands. I'll never forget it. And she sidled up to me, because the roads were very narrow there, and she put a little piece of bread in my hand, a roll, in my hand. And I'd never forgotten that in Czechoslovakia. And I thought it was fantastic. To be truthful, we got through Czechoslovakia, and on the outskirts of Czechoslovakia, the British were pushing more and more, and the Russians were pushing more and more, and the guards at that time... Oh, by the way, we went past Auschwitz. Places like Auschwitz, places where a lot of people joined their group, and if you couldn't carry on and drop down, they just shot you. So you had to keep going.
The prisoners of war were shot, were they, if they dropped out?
Prisoners of war, or whatever, whoever they were, they got shot if they couldn't carry on. That is why a lot of boys who just couldn't carry on, and we used to have one in between two people. We used to carry them on. This went on till the end of Czechoslovakia, and I said to four friends of mine, I said, I can't do it no more. I said, I'm going to make a break. And they had got very, very... The Germans were scared at that time, the German guards, and they were really worried at that time. And they were lackadaisical in their strictness and everything, because they knew the war was nearly over. They could sense it. So we made a break, and we made a break that night, four of us, five of us altogether, and we got to a farm, which was about 4 miles away from where they had put us overnight. And they didn't know if you made a break, because they didn't know how many people were on the march. They didn't march, the Germans themselves. After they'd done so many miles, they used to get on the truck and they used to drive and others take over, you see. Got as far as this farm, and we crept into the farm and got up into the loft. The next morning, an elderly woman came out. A woman came out with a younger person who must have been her daughter. Came to the barn, and they could see us up in the loft. So she said, she turned around and said, oh, she had a son who was prisoner of war in England. This was a Czechoslovakian woman, and she had a son who was POW in England. He had been forced to join the German army. And she turned around and said, When the Krieg is finished, when the war's over, will you go and see my son and tell him that the farm is still here and everything's okay? So we said, yes, when the war's over, I said, I will see to that, I will definitely do it.
And she looked after you, didn't she?
She was fantastic. She looked after us, she fed us, and... She gave us two meals every day, a couple of meals. Used to bring it up to the where we were sleeping, and she was very, very good. But she didn't have in that farm. She didn't have a wireless or anything, I don't think, because the war was over and we didn't even know the war was over. It had been over 3 months when a American combine came into the farm, American group, and I couldn't believe it. I saw the eggs. So I said, they said, what are you doing here? I said, we're POWs, we made a break from the march. Oh, they said, don't worry, the war's been over 3 months already. I want you to drive to a place they told us where was an airport. I want you to, here's a car for you. And they took a couple of people out of one of the cars and gave me a, what do you call it, a Mercedes-Benz for the five of us to drive to an airport. We drove to this airport and we got on the plane. We got on the plane and we came down at Oxford. Now this was very funny because I live in Westcliff here, and 45 to 50 miles, 50 years after the war, there was a chappy sitting having lunch on the front. And we wanted a change. We went down and had lunch on the front for a change. And he looked at me, he says, I know you. He said, the reason I remember you, he says, you were the last POWs to come out of Germany. One of the last POWs to come out of Germany. And he recognised, he was the one who used to check you in. He said, tomorrow you'll be deloused, he used to say to me. But he remembered me from those days, so I couldn't have altered such a lot. You remember me from coming back from prison of war life. And he said to me, oh, he said, it goes back those years, he said, I don't remember your name, he said, son, it's Schwa, Schwa, Schwa. And he, you know, he must have had a marvellous memory, because I know why he remembered me, because I didn't wait for delousing. I wanted to get home. So I went out of Oxford, and there was a lorry going along, and I said, chum, you're going to London? He says, yes. I said, give me a lift. And he gave me a lift to London, and I got home. And at that time, when I got home, they put, up in the street, they put, welcome home, Alf. They realised I was coming back. Because my wife thought I'd believe dead. When she had the news, it was Driver Schwartz, captured, but believed dead. Because they hadn't heard from me. We couldn't send any messages or anything, you see. And she thought I was gone. Anyway, and then my brother-in-law found out that I was prisoner of war. He was in the medical corps here in England, and he realised that I was POW, and he told my wife that I'm safe, I'm prisoner of war, and I'll be coming home soon. They got the news. And that was that part.
Mm-hmm. If I could go back to the death march, you were saying that you passed Auschwitz or a camp,
like, yes. Auschwitz. I don't know if it was Auschwitz, I didn't know.
Yes, but a camp.
Outside and Czechoslovakia.
Did people from the camp join you?
Joined onto the group, yeah.
And what sort
they were forced to join onto the group.
Yes. What did you see these people? And
only that they were dressed in white at the time, you know, white, what do you call it? But we didn't, they weren't, see, there was thousands of us on the march. You just visualised that you visualised some people were joining from this one and that one. They were joining, they were pushing them all onto this march, you see.
Did you have any idea of their condition, what they looked like?
No. No idea whatsoever. No idea, because we all looked the same. On the march, after 3 months of marching, in the snow and the rain, and you know, it was really bad, and we looked like nothing on earth. Nothing on earth.
Did you have shoes, Alf?
No. Well, the shoes you'd worn them down to nothing, and we tied bits of cloth, we tore up, and what do you call it, we were wearing, and tied them round our feet. We had to at that time.
Did you get frostbite?
No, I was very lucky. I did. What I did get was rheumatoid arthritis. When I came out of the army, I had very bad rheumatoid arthritis.
And do you reckon many people died on that march?
Quite a lot. Quite a lot died on the march. Well, there is a book about it. Oh, I should have got you the book. I should have got that book. A friend of mine's got the book. And it told you about the march, isn't it? There's a book brought out about the 2,000 mile death march.
Yes, did many, did many escape? You know, the you were saying how you made a break.
Well, we made a break. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. There must have been a lot of boys breaking away at that time.
And how about earlier in the war? Did people escape from the camps you were in?
Impossible. That was... People escaped. You might have got out. One person might have got out of a camp. But it was... You were too well guarded. In Germany, you didn't have a lot of chance to get out. To get out.
When did you hear about the full extent of the Holocaust, Alf?
When did I hear about it? When I got home. It shook me, really. I got home, when I arrived back in England, an officer came up where I was living in London at the time with my wife. He came up and he asked me about a few things, what happened during the war, and I made a break, came back late, you know. And I said to him, now, I promise this woman I'm going to see her son and tell him that the farm is okay. He said, no, you can't, more than you dare do. He said, I will see to it, I will tell the son, I will find out where the son is exactly, and because I had the name on paper, and he will find out where it was, and he will tell the son that the farm is okay. This officer who came up to see me. And at that time, what else? Oh, I didn't tell you about it. It was a terrible thing, but we done it. We couldn't help it. We killed a person. In Lansdell 344, when we used to read the news out, this chappie, this fifth columnist who was there, he knew every little thing that was being done in that camp, and the Germans knew everything. He was notifying them. Anyway, a group of boys got together, and at that time they didn't have toilets, they had latrines, which was dug out of the ground. And a group of boys got hold of him. They found out that he was a German, and they got hold of him and pushed him into the latrine and suffocated him. A group of fellas done that. There was about 12 of them done it. Their names I don't know, and if I knew I wouldn't say anything. And that was that.
Was he, the body discovered?
I couldn't say anything, I don't even know, because I was sent after that, about a week after or 2 weeks after. I was in that camp for about nearly a year in that camp. And after this happened, I was sent up to Ratibor in charge of a group, you know, like to see that the group was all right up there.
What were the conditions they worked under, the group at Ratibor? Were they given pay for the work they did?
No. No, they're getting food. They were getting food to keep them going there. Oh, wait a minute. In Ratibor, oh, I haven't told you something. In Ratibor, in the sugar factory, a fella, not one of our boys, but a German, fell into a vat. Fell into a vat of boiling sugar beet. Now, you don't realise how hot these vats are. They couldn't get him out. He just went to nothing. And since then, I've never taken sugar. Since then, I've never taken sugar. They bagged the stuff afterwards and sent it out. Well, I never didn't mention that.
Yes, was he fell in, he wasn't pushed in?
No, he fell in himself. He fell into the vat, he slipped into the vat. And they couldn't do nothing, couldn't get him out. Impossible to get him out because he just sunk it. It's like boiling, you've never seen anything like it. It's such heat there with this sugar beet, it's such high heat that you just couldn't, no one could do anything to get him out. Because he would be burnt as he touched he would dead as he touched the place. And the boys told me about it. They said, oh, you've never seen anything like it. They still bagged up the sugar. I said, no. They said, yes, they did. They bagged up the sugar. I never saw them bagging the sugar, but they bagged up the sugar and sent it out as if nothing.
Yeah.
And that was that.
Yeah. We're particularly interested, as you know, in the Holocaust survivors. And I wonder, is there anything else you could tell me about the people who joined the Death March? That you've described their image, which was, I suppose, quite a fleeting one, as you were on the march, any rate.
Well, the Gestapo used to come round in some of the camps, and this is what I heard. I never saw it myself, but I heard that they used to bring out a dozen boys from the camps and just shoot them in the forest, because we went through all different forests and everything.
But the camp inmates, you know, the
camp inmates.
Yes. Did you see any more of them?
We wasn't attached to them. They were on the march, a few of them, but there were such big groups that you couldn't tell.
Yes, and you all merged together, were you, in the march?
It was just almost together. So many were put in each tent, and we stayed in various different places. It wasn't in one farm chicken pen we were pushed into. It wasn't in one place. There must have been 100 different places they were pushed into at night. And then they had to come out in the morning and go on the doings. And we just pushed in there and just lay down on the ground and slept. It was a thing that you can't believe what happens. That was the worst part of my experiences in the army. I could stand the knocking about, I could stand everything else, but I couldn't stand that march. That march really killed people. It really got under your skin, and I was young and very fit when I went into the army, but then I came out of there, I wasn't the same person.
Well, Alf, thank you very much indeed for telling me about your experience in the war. You know, quite a few camps and experiences. And
yeah.
That awful death march.
Yeah, and I came out of there, and I got demobbed, and went back to civil life, civilian life. For the first year, I couldn't work at all because I was under a Dr. Gold in the Whitechapel Road. He was treating me for rheumatoid arthritis. I still drove a car, but I couldn't drive. I couldn't change the gears with my hand. Couldn't change the gears at all. Oh, I was offered, at that time when I came out of the army, I was offered a pension, which I refused and said, give it to charity. I was young and I was foolish, to be truthful. I was independent. I was an independent person all my life. And I said, give it to charity. They offered me 10 or 6 months a week, which in those days was quite a lot of money in 1946.